In the court of public opinion, I plead the fifth.
I won't plead guilty to much, but being obsessed with Bravo.
I love it. Two, BOGO. I'll do the same. Hopefully I won't wear slippers to court, which maybe we'll get to. You guys, but if I do, they're cute. So we just need
the to. Way I wish I could wear slippers to court for the years that I suffered in very high heels because Alec McBeal gave us all the most unrealistic expectation of how female attorneys are supposed to dress. And I took that right into my early career with the tallest, spikiest, stiletto-y high heels, which are real cute, but not for a full work day. So I get it. I want to wear slippers in court. I wore Crocs in court when I was pregnant. I lost all care. And the judges were like, are you okay? I'm like, no, I'm not, but I'm here.
Were they okay with it? Because, you know, judges can be fickle.
The judges in the courthouse at the time were very sensitive to the fact that I was not doing well with my pregnancy, that I had a difficult pregnancy. My feet were so swollen, literally nothing fit but Crocs. They were all black. I didn't bedazzle them. So I was just like, look, Your Honor, we're doing our best.
We left the Guy Fieri imaging at home, like a little extra pizza slice or whatever people are putting in. They use like buttons or something. I don't understand.
Yes. My colleagues gave me a harder time than I think most of the judges did because I think you could just look at me and be like, ooh, this is rough for her.
Oh, no. Well, hopefully this episode won't be for her. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 500 something.
I can't. 500.
I know, right? Isn't that unwell?
It's so exciting.
Talk about being unwell.
It's amazing.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be joined by return guest, former prosecutor, who is everyone's favorite legal commentator, as well as the host of The Emily Show, where she gives a fresh take on legal commentary in the news and pop culture stories you want to talk about. Welcome back to Andy's Girls, Hulu superstar, Emily D. Baker. Emily D. Baker, welcome back.
I'm so glad to be here. The Housewife and the Hustler was fun. Trial coverage on YouTube has been really fun. My channel's been beating Legacy Media for trial coverage now. And it's absolutely bananas to see how much people are just looking to have a conversation, not just about the serious stuff, but the serious business of reality TV. The way I'm gripped right now by the traitors is I don't know if I've yelled at my TV the way I do watching the traitors. My 15-year-old's like, are you okay? I'm like, no, I'm not. Don't come for Phaedra.
Wait, we need to do a Taking It Personally episode about the traitors. Like, literally,
it's so good.
You need to come on an episode. We'll talk about it.
Yes, I love it so much. And I was really sick last week. I had not watched The Traitors, so I binged watched it while I had the worst stomach virus ever and could do nothing but lay on the couch. And I was gripped. I love everything about it. I love that it doesn't take itself too seriously, but it's so dramatic. I love the interplay of all the, you know, the reality TV gamers from Survivor and kind of the legacy shows I used to watch too, the Bravo Lebs who are crushing it. It's just so fun. It's so fun.
And honestly, the roundtable feels a little bit like people going at it in court.
It does. It absolutely does. There's a lot of accusations and not a lot of evidence though.
I mean, well, that'll set us up for an interesting kind of case when it comes to the final verdict. Listen, Emily, we need to. So you're coming on a tip, just to let you know. We're going to pencil
yes.
in as soon as we're done with this. But in the meantime, so I just watched part two of Housewife and the Hustler, The Reckoning. And obviously, you were a part of the. Honestly, just kind of translating a lot of the intricacies, not only of the case itself, but also, I would argue, translating this to the importance of all things Girardi to a non-Bravo viewing audience. How was that experience like for you, filming and just honestly, and the responses that you've received from people about the Girardi case?
I'm always so interested in working with legacy media and production teams that I really like. And I've worked with the production team that did The Housewife and The Hustler before on other things. I've had a really good relationship with Hulu and ABC, and I'm always happy when they ask me back. But I'm a YouTuber and a podcaster, so I'm used to being able to do things like on my own schedule, in my own way. So it's very interesting to sit down and record for hours and have it clipped down into minutes and try to make legal commentary concise and accurate is a challenge, and a challenge that I'm really game for, but I don't have control over the final product. So I'm always like wanting to be very careful that I'm conveying the message and they're not just like quippy one-liners, but I'm actually helping not just ground the facts of what it is, but really bring the importance and the gravity of what this is. Tom Girardi's downfall is the biggest legal scandal I think we've ever seen. It is hundreds of millions of dollars. It is thousands of victim clients, and it is corruption at the top levels of the California State Bar, access to everybody from the governor of California to all of the heads of law enforcement. Girardi built relationships to insulate himself from question, like some kind of a mob boss. And it gets media attention because it's tied to Erica Girardi, but the action was Tom Girardi's, and it was going on long before he ever met Erica Girardi. And we learned that from the excellent investigative journalists at the LA Times. We wouldn't know what we do without the LA Times suing the California State Bar, going to the Supreme Court of the state of California to get access to those documents in the way that only large legacy media outlets have the money and the fortitude to do, because it protects the journalist when the LA Times is the one suing, not an independent journalist. And the work of Harry Ryan and Matt Hamilton has been really excellent. And I loved seeing them featured so much, walking us through as the narrators of this part of The Housewife and Hustler. What did you think about seeing them in it so much?
Well, I felt for Matt at the end. I can't imagine how honestly torturous it must have been for him to be on site when Erica met with a few of the victims and not being able to ask her a question. And I just can't imagine what that must have felt like, while also seeing the ways that the victims were in a position where they're not journalists, they're not TV personalities. And so there's so much pressure at a certain point to maybe deliver on behalf of your, you know, beloved family member, the idea of justice, the pressure of, God forbid, representing hundreds of people who have been defrauded by Tom. And in addition to that, there are TV cameras. So how do you sort of inhabit all of that universe? Like the layer on top of that, what is a person supposed to communicate to Erica? And now that she's in a chair with us at the table, am I supposed to welcome her? Like, am I supposed to be friendly to her? How much of this is me apologizing, which is the craziest part of this, of like the edit? And they're not responsible for anything having to do with BH, but it was I can't imagine being in Matt's position watching all of that. But I did appreciate him say, you know, essentially it would be great if Erica actually, you know, allowed me to interview her so that we could share more information and bring more people to justice.
Absolutely. And I don't, with the amount of pending litigation she has going on, I don't see her sitting down in that way. And we've seen her really push back against the women on her show from asking her any questions. But we've also seen her struggle to understand the concept of empathy with her therapist. I thought it was illuminating that we saw that this year on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And we saw that play out in this sit down with the victims where they're like, we've just not heard from you. And she's like, nobody asked me. And it's like, I'm sorry, what? That, what? Like, it felt to me like the entire internet was asking for Erica's perspective on this. And her perspective was, I don't give a fuck about anyone about except for me. And I think that was her genuine feeling, that she's circling the wagons to protect herself. Her lawyer came in to try to do a little bit of that. I was really surprised that we saw her lawyer and apparently her benefactor, different person, sit down with her sit down with cameras on the show. I was very surprised her lawyer, Evan, sat down with cameras.
I have about 13,000 questions for you. So starting with, it's going to be a 19-hour episode, so buckle up. starting with Erica's lawyer, what did you think of his demeanor and sense of righteous passion in how he described Erica? How much of that is specific to his job, which is trying to protect his client, and how much of that is maybe something else?
I think that her attorney very much believes that Erica has been the fall guy because not only she's a woman, but because she's the one on television. And I think he has some indignation towards Tom. I haven't met a lawyer that is anything other than appalled and outraged at Tom. He is really the thing that you never want in your own profession, someone who is stealing from and harming the most vulnerable who trusted him. So I think that Erica's lawyer truly does see Erica as a victim of Tom Girardi, and he was trying to express that on camera. And he's expressed that in press releases that he's made and in responsive releases that he made. So I'm not surprised that he's out there saying she's taking the blame for the actions of her husband. And this isn't fair. I don't think he's super dialed into the reality TV sphere. And I wonder how much of her own statements he is aware of. And I wonder how much of the things she said on the show he's aware of, because I think a lot of the frustration with Erica recently has been her own actions and responses and not the things that Tom did.
Yeah, it felt a little reminiscent to actually an episode that we recorded the day of the Jen Shah sentencing, which I attended, when the judge in that case said essentially nothing related to reality TV matters because it's scripted and it's entirely fake. And I kind of thought to myself, well, I'm sure Bravo will be thrilled to hear that. But also on top of it, couldn't you look at the ways that Jen and, in a very different circumstance, Erica flaunted wealth? And if you're interested in seeing how this money was taken and what it was spent on, I would think watching Erica's like performative, like the culture around rich that she had would be potentially of interest, at least in understanding some of the anger there, which maybe isn't a legal matter, but I do think it kind of informs all of this because, you know, like Erica's lawyer seemed to say, you know, this has everything to do with Tom and nothing to do with Erica, and reality TV is not going to answer any of those questions, but it actually is to me. It's going to answer some questions of where the money went.
Well, and because we're seeing the women on the show ask those questions too, we're seeing Erica respond to being asked those questions by mostly Garcelle and Crystal and Sutton asking the hard questions and the questions that I think we all want to know. I often say that it feels to me like Garcelle and Crystal are the voice of the audience. They're kind of narrating for us because they often are asking the questions that I'm sitting there thinking too in the moment and not backing down from those questions. But when it comes to a court setting, I'm not surprised that the judges are like, I don't know how much of what you said is even authentic and how much context there is appropriately for it, because it's edited. And I don't think it's scripted, but situations are set up for interactions to happen, and those interactions can be exaggerated to make good TV. And the way people say things and what they are saying aren't under oath, and they aren't necessarily authentic in the way that court needs them to be authentic, because they are edited. However, in the Girardi case, looking at what's in Erica's closet, how much money's being spent on different things, you definitely get a sense of the wealth that was there. And it leaves really big questions when we look at the bankruptcy about where that money went. Because when we got to the bankruptcy, there's not much left to sell. And that's kind of a shocking thing. This is why they're fighting over the earrings so much, because there's just not that much of value left. And they're going through the law firm and selling off lingerie that was in Tom Girardi's desk drawer, and wine and whiskey and a car and whatever, because there's there's no money left. So the money with Jen Shah seemed to be flowing like a river, where they're just like throwing it down, but have nothing really tangible for the government to take. And it feels a lot like Tom Doherty was doing the same thing. He had the house that he had bought forever ago, but not a lot of other tangible assets, other than clothes and purses, and that's it. I don't know where those assets are. I find it hard to believe that there aren't any anywhere.
How do you feel about the way that Erica has been claiming victory over these diamond earrings on the show?
It's not exactly squaring with what I read in the court documents, because it is a victory in a very nuanced legal way. But the argument isn't that Erica's in the right. The nuance of what's going on with the scandal earrings is that the bankruptcy court was saying they're from the bankruptcy estate, like money that the bankruptcy can redistribute. And the court is saying, no, this came from specific clients. So it belongs to those specific clients, not to the bankruptcy as a whole. So you can't take money from, you can't take the earrings that were bought with money that was supposed to go to client A and then put that money in the bankruptcy and redistribute it to client C, D, and E. So it's not an argue over it didn't come from client money. It's an argue over, is it traceable to certain clients and therefore not in possession of the bankruptcy estate? So it's a nuanced legal argument over which clients they were taken from, not that they weren't taken from clients. That those earrings were purchased with money that belonged to clients. The argument Erica's team was making was, well, it could have been legal fees. Tom Doherty could have been owed these fees. So you can't really say it's client funds. It's a losing argument when the check was written out of a client trust account and disguised as costs. I think that's a fraudulent transfer. But it doesn't mean that it's the property of the bankruptcy estate writ large. But it's not that Erica was right and is completely vindicated either.
She's really spinning this as, not only was I fully vindicated, but that vindicates me against any past behavior that I've exhibited, especially stuff that makes people feel cringe.
I still don't know if Erica knew at the time that the earrings were given to her, if those are even the earrings that the check was written for, because there's still a lot of questions about whether the earrings that were turned back over to the bankruptcy are actually the earrings that the check was written for in the first place, because the GIA certifications don't match and the size of the earrings don't match. There's still a lot of real weird questions about the earrings, because earrings don't lose weight and don't change shape and dimension. So it's real interesting, the whole situation surrounding the earrings, which is why there's so much conversation about the earrings. But I don't know if she knew how Tom paid for those earrings. I think the reason she's fighting over keeping the earrings at the time is because she's going to have so many debts to pay. She's trying to hold all the assets she legally can to pay off the debts that are still coming for her on the side of the personal bankruptcy, tax debts, and the rest of it. She has to protect herself financially because the crater of debt is coming for her at the end of particularly the personal bankruptcy. But she's not vindicated. Those earrings were purchased with money that shouldn't have been used to purchase earrings. That's at the end of the day, that's it. Whether that money goes back into the bankruptcy to get redistributed, or whether that money tries to get back to the original clients whose trust account it was taken out, or whether that money could theoretically have been attorney's fees somewhere down the line, is really nuanced legal wrangling over how Tom stole this money. It's not vindication, or at least I don't see it that way. If these are even the same earrings, because that's still not clear.
What other earrings would they be? Like, because they were sold, right? They were sold at auction.
They were sold. And the earrings that were sold at auction were a different carat weight and slightly different dimensions than the earrings that were noted on the receipt from the $750,000 check. So there's something odd there. What it is, I don't know. But with the receipt from the jeweler that was in the bankruptcy documents and the check from the jeweler connects these earrings to two different GIA certificates. And the certificates show the weight of the earrings. You can pull them up online and the dimension of the earrings. But when Erica turned the earrings over and ultimately allowed them to be sold because they didn't object to it or take a writ to stop that sale, they were then certified again, and the dimensions and the weight don't match the original GIA certificates.
How do you, as a legal commentator and also a Bravo fan, look at Erica? Like, how do you view her? What are your thoughts on her at this point right now?
I really try to navigate what we know factually and then how she's responded to things. I try not to speculate too much about what could be or couldn't be. I think Erica was put in a very difficult position by Tom's behavior, for sure. I don't know how much of it she knew. I think that we saw a lot of her lashing out in defensiveness as her world crumbled. I think we can see that she needed to be in therapy sooner than she was to help process and deal with it. But I wonder how much of this is Erica thinking to herself, I have to perform to stay on TV, because truly she has and is facing the personal bankruptcy not being discharged. The judge already said it won't be. Tom's not going to pay those debts. So the debts in the personal bankruptcy are hers to hold. How is she going to continue to financially exist without being on The Real Housewives? So I wonder how much of her behavior was her choosing to lean into, if you want to hate me, fucking hate me, because at least you're talking about me and I'm going to stay on the show. So she's complex. I don't think that the way she behaved helped the victims of Tom Girardi who are trying to process, but I think Erica's also trying to process. So I have a lot of kind of conflicting emotions on it, because what her husband did is so abhorrent, and I don't know how much of that she knew. But I know she wasn't working at the law firm. I know she couldn't control his behavior, and I think she really turned a blind eye to a lot of what Tom was doing. But then again, is that so unusual for wives of extremely wealthy men to not know what's going on with the finances? I don't think that that's particularly unusual, but she's sure free to get in her book saying, I signed those tax returns too. And I think that's going to come back to bite her. I don't know.
And then you think, like, I get the whole, you know, they didn't even know each other in the 80s. So it's like, he's been stealing for such a long time. He didn't start after he married this woman or she decided she needed to sing. Like, he's been doing this for a while. I wonder how much of the pressure of the show and appearing to be the kind of guy that people thought he was, how much of that influenced where the money was going. But he was stealing it regardless. You know, like, maybe he stole more, but it was still happening.
And it was happening before that. And I wonder who wanted the show more, because it seems to me that Tom loved being the guy and having his beautiful third wife who is got a singing career and is dropping the see you next Tuesday on a diamond studded necklace is such a juxtaposition for someone who's got a building named after him at his Catholic law school and who is friends with the chief of police and the sheriff and the governor. And I think he loved that attention and loved that scandal and loved that she was a showgirl and that he was showing people her videos and how shocking they were. And I think he loved the attention and shine that it brought to him. And I think that's part of why he promoted it and pushed it. But we know that Erica wasn't the only one benefiting from Tom's stealing. Now that we've had the benefit of the bankruptcy trustee digging through all of this, his CFO had a American Express card that was being paid off for personal expenses. An investigator for the state bar had a American Express card that they're paying off for personal expenses and paying for a car for them. He had so many people on payroll to insulate himself. Erica is just the most public, invisible one of all of the people that were benefiting from this man at the cost of his clients, including his son-in-law and his daughter, including other lawyers at the firm. So I can understand some of the frustration of Erica's lawyer being like, she's getting a disproportional amount of the hate when there's so many people who are similarly situated. I'm like, but they're not on Real Housewives saying, I don't give a fuck about anybody but me. And that's the difference. It's not in everybody's face. And the wealth wasn't in everybody's face.
And also adding on to that, her lawyer said something along the lines of like, people are focusing on Erica, but they need to be focusing on Tom. Like, Tom is the bad guy here. But then my reaction is, but Erica wasn't focusing on Tom. Erica didn't have 1% of the anger and rage against Tom that she told us multiple times she had against the victims, because she felt like they were coming after her. But what do you think your husband was doing? Like, that's the whole, it's not even, I guess it's a conversation of empathy, but it's also a conversation of Erica living in a universe of alternative facts. Like, he was a bad guy. Why don't you, how
where's the rage?
Where's the rage? And I know that there's typically a flip side argument of like, well, she can't, you know, she can't admit guilt or whatever. But it's like, you're not admitting your own guilt by not denying the reality of the harm that happened as a direct result of your husband's actions over decades. Like, Tom, spoiler alert, Tom is a worse guy than the people he defrauded. They're not bad people for trying to seek justice, because her husband is, as one of the victims said, the devil. Like, when he paused, when they were like, word association, when you think of the bar, when you think, and when they said Tom, before he spoke, I said, the devil. He's the devil.
He cultivated trust from people who are going through the worst thing they've ever experienced, told them that he would fight for them, put himself on the cover of magazines and newspapers and TV shows and bar associations, had himself awarded and held up as this victor for the little guy while he was fucking stealing them blind, and they were struggling to pay medical bills or couldn't pay medical bills, weren't able to house themselves because of their medical bills. The level of depravity that is there is criminal. And that's why we're seeing him prosecuted. And I'm glad for it. The thing that was frustrating for me with Erica is that she maintained on the show, when there was evidence that a number of the victims had proven that Tom had stolen from them. We hadn't gotten to everybody yet. Fine. We hadn't gotten to everybody yet. But there was proof that he had stolen from the Rigomez family and others that was documented evidentiary proof. So these are not alleged victims. These are victims. This has been proven in court. This has been proven in Chicago with Judge Durkin, who was having, he's my favorite character in all of this. He was having none of Tom Girardi's bullshit. And his order, I've never seen a federal judge write a scathing order like this, basically saying he needs to be criminally prosecuted. This is the most horrific thing I've ever seen, but this is not for me to do. So I expect others will. He put it all in writing, how Tom stole from the Lion Air victims. So those things were known, as Erica's on the show filming saying alleged victims. And I think that's what struck her castmates so wrong, but it's also what struck so many of us in the audience so wrong. It's like, these aren't alleged victims. These are victims. These are not people just piling on to try to get money that's not there. These are people who were very really harmed, and then very really harmed by their lawyer. The breach of trust is so egregious. It's heartbreaking to watch the victims speak up. And I'm glad that this version, or this second part of The Housewife and the Hustler, focused on that more, on what that does to you after you've had something happen to you. The catastrophic injury clients were living their life, going to work, just doing their thing. And this catastrophic thing happened to them. And he was the one that was supposed to find them justice, and instead he lined his own pockets. And then she turns around and calls them alleged victims and spends $40,000 a month on glam. It's why it didn't sit well with people. Instead of saying, I thought my husband was a shining example and a paragon of fighting for the little guy, and I'm disgusted by what I'm seeing coming out, and I don't know how to reconcile it with the person that I knew, and I don't know what to do with it, and I'm horrified and embarrassed. And I can't even process this. That's not what she said.
Paris is always a good idea. And when I schlep on over to Europe, to my favorite city in the world, I bring with me a few important phrases that I have learned from housewives. C'est bon, chic c'est la vie. Je m'appelle the Countess, n'est-ce pas, Luann? And while those key phrases are important when speaking to any French bravo-holic, for other matters of life, that's where Rosetta Stone comes in. Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including, of course, French. It features fast language acquisition. It immerses you in so many ways. There's no English translations, so you really learn to speak, to listen, and to think in that language. It's an intuitive process. You pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. J'adore Chris Manzo. Et toi? There's a speech recognition filter which gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's convenient with desktop and app options, and it's an amazing value. Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. A steal. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, AGs can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Erin and your life and mine. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening,
I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon.
It's why that last scene, I find myself, bewildered is not the word, but I find myself, I guess, confused about the fact that the last scene was framed around Erica being a victim and now a survivor. Like, there was no curiosity. And I think some of this genuinely was just a little bit of discomfort with being filmed, especially in like maybe one of the most intimate, loaded conversations that some of these people will have in the entirety of their lives. Like, this is a really tense kind of dynamic, plus all of the additional pressure. But I just kind of couldn't get over the fact that she had no curiosity about anyone else at that table. Like, including the fact that, why wasn't I here before? Because you didn't invite me. I mean, I understand The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is going to be framed around Erica's experience because she's a cast member. But is she the lead person in, you know, Tom Girardi versus the world? Because she's not like the first and most important victim. And you would think she would know enough to perform not that.
The fact that she was having to ask, remind me what happened to you again, was interesting to me that she hadn't maybe. There's a lot of content about the law of what Tom did. And even if Erica doesn't want to watch content, which I understand her maybe choosing not to do, the documents exist and her lawyer has all of them. She could have asked her lawyer these things to prep for that sit down with the victims. Like, she could have asked people, can you break down for me what my husband did so I can understand it? I'm trying to understand what I'm facing here. And it seems like she hasn't, which is staggering to me that she wouldn't want to know everything. It seemed like Sutton wants to know more about what Tom Brody did than Erica wants to know. And that was very apparent in her sit down with the victims, where it felt like she sat down in front of the cameras and it was like, what would you all like to say to me? As opposed to her saying, can you tell me your stories? How has this been for you? How are you working through it? It was odd. And I wonder how much more footage there is of that sit down. And I really want to see it. There's got to be more.
And how do you feel about the fact that she hasn't reached out since, that no one has heard from her since?
I'm not surprised by that. Are you surprised by that?
I'm not.
You're surprised she has.
But I also don't know what asks were presented to her of people saying like, well, she hasn't helped us. I don't know.
And I don't either. And I wonder if Erica's like, I don't know what you want me to do about it. I just, it seems like that's kind of where she's at. And I don't know what healing she can help facilitate with the victims when she didn't have a lot of role in the action. She was spending the money from what Tom did, but he's the one that was making those decisions to steal from his clients. So I don't know if she can really atone to the victims in a way that would help give them closure. And I hope that the criminal case helps give some of the victims closure, that he's actually being held to account for his actions.
And the other part of that to me is this strange, well, it's the editing part of the conversation where I'm thinking like, but a producer didn't feed her the line, "I don't give a shit about anyone. I don't give a fuck," whatever it was, "about anyone but me." She said that repeatedly. She behaved in that way the entirety of the season. So I just was confused about the sort of mutual agreement that she didn't do any, that she wasn't responsible for her behavior, because in some ways that might have been, like, as you said, like the realest thing that she did, you know, it was kind of like the realest thing that she did.
Yeah. And I don't understand the psychology behind Erica Girardi at all. I don't think we've seen enough of her, not as a castmate, to really know what she's going through. I think she's trying to get there this year. I'm very surprised Bravo gave her a spinoff about her show in Vegas. What do you think about that? They didn't really touch on it in The Housewife and The Hustler, but it's being promoted at the same time. So we know that's coming soon.
The timing of it, I thought, was really interesting. I also wondered when that was finalized versus when she agreed to participate in the Hulu documentary, because a person could make a really strong argument that the Hulu documentary will help the Bravo docuseries, because we're all supposed to be focused on Erica moving on. What better way for her to move on and into the next chapter of her life than accept aspects of the reality that there are existing real victims here, or at least people who she's showing up to listen to speak, even though we didn't really see that in what was shown.
Yeah, I need the timeline, because the sit down with the victims was filmed by the LA Times when it happened. Was that last summer? And we see on the show as they're filming that she agreed to do the Vegas residency. So it seems, my timeline might be off, I'm so ADHD, but that the residency was known before the sit down with the victims happened in the summer and was filmed by the LA Times. How that film was going to see the light of day, I don't know if they knew at that time, but they knew. I mean, and obviously they knew they were filming. The victims had consented to it being filmed. They had invited her to come participate. And poor Matt Hamilton was like, "But I have so many questions. Let me ask questions." And I wanted to see so much more from that sit down, but I don't think it should be on the victims to have to pull empathy out of Erica. And I don't know if there was a goal or a discussion about what the sit down was going to be, other than it was like, "There's cameras here. Here's Erica. Go."
Surely there had to be some sort of negotiation of like, Matt can't ask a question. I don't think he just chose not to. I don't know a single reporter who would be in that situation near her. I mean, there's B-roll of them, like, you know, chatting, but I don't see a world in which there wouldn't be, especially because it's filmed by the LA Times, LA Studios co-production. So, like, I assume, based on just my assumption, that's how that word works, that there was an agreement that reporters wouldn't ask questions. If they did, it certainly wasn't shown. It could have been both. I think it would have been a better, stronger conversation had there been a reporter who could have helped guide the conversation.
A moderator probably would have been helpful, because whatever people think of Erica, this whole experience has undoubtedly been traumatic for her. It's been traumatic for the victims. So you've got a bunch of people in a room together that have had trauma centered around the same person's actions. A moderator would have maybe helped bridge some of those gaps. But I think one of the most authentic things we've seen from Erica on Real Housewives is her sitting with her therapist and her therapist trying to explain to her what empathy means. And I think that that's why a moderator would have been maybe helpful to guide that conversation, that's not being guided by empathy from Erica. And I don't think has to be or should be guided by empathy from the victims, because that's too much emotional weight to put on them when they are still facing the very real world that they're not all going to get paid. And at the end of the day, they're not all going to be made whole from what Tom Girardi did. And they're sitting across from the woman who is still hopping on private jets and getting to go do a residency in Vegas and dressing in designer clothes and seemingly picking up and moving on, when they're not really given the opportunity to pick up and move on in the same way. They have to pick up and move on because of what was done to them, but they're not, that's not as easily done, especially for the victims that were injured physically.
Yeah, survival looks different based on your privilege. And Erica had the privilege of having this guy who was a good friend of Tom and cares an awful lot for Erica pony up, he said, a couple million dollars, right? At least.
At least.
In order to ensure she has the best potential new beginning that she possibly can. That was fascinating to me.
I don't even know what that looks like. Like, I don't understand. I don't understand what that even looks like, where somebody's just like, oh yeah, I financially got you. It's so not the world that I encompass. I also wonder what the victim's reactions were to that. It's like, oh, so another lawyer just swooped in to help her. Because my speculation and my question remains, is that Tom's money coming back to Erica, or is that truly this other person's money? Because the fact that Tom Girardi's money is so gone is still staggering to me. I still can't quite fathom where all of the money went, where the, you know, when Tom sat down in those video depositions was like, I had $80 million. I'm like, poof, $80 million doesn't go poof. It doesn't. And the way his books were kept and the difficulty the forensic accountants are having tracking money, the fact that money could be elsewhere is not lost on me, that it is a possibility that Tom's good friend could just be pulling, and the money that's coming back to Erica is not actually the friend's money. And that is something I can't look away from, because I don't have answers to those questions.
Yeah. And what Erica said, I think, in the sort of at the tail end of the conversation, which I thought was an important point, was like, Tom is the kind of guy who would have never admitted guilt. He wouldn't now, he wouldn't then, he wouldn't believe that he had done anything wrong. And I do believe that that's 100% accurate.
Agreed. Absolutely. Because you can't do what Tom's doing to his clients without lacking completely empathy. Like, you can't. It's funny, fraudsters have a very kind of specific way of orienting the world around their behavior to make their behavior okay. So they really do get confused when they're confronted with criminal liability. They're like, this is what everybody does. This isn't wrong. And we saw that with Jen Shaw, and we see that with Tom Girardi, and we've seen it with the Bernie Madoffs and plenty of others. They're like, I mean, I don't understand. It's just business. This is how everybody moves money around. This is what everybody does. No, it's not. It's criminal for a reason. And I think Tom Girardi is like, I still think Tom Girardi's like, I don't understand what all y'all have a problem with.
So here's my question. How does Erica then digest her active involvement in all things Marco Marco?
I don't know, because that is the case where she was the one initiating things. She was the one initiating an $800,000 chargeback against a business that she worked with, who seems, based on their legal filings, to have delivered the costumes that she said weren't delivered. So I don't know how she sees that as separate from the things Tom was doing, because it's similar behavior. And it seems that she used Tom's contacts to get a prosecution initiated on the federal level that surprised me that the feds were even interested in. It looked like the kind of case, and I worked in Los Angeles as a district attorney. The feds brought us cases regularly where they're like, this case came across, this isn't something we're handling. Here you go, state prosecutors, good luck. The Marco case is the type of case that would normally have just gotten shuttled down to state level prosecutors because it's not the type of case the feds generally take. It's not a staggering dollar amount. It's not a wide ranging multi-victim fraud. When we're looking at frauds like Jen Shaw's, you're dealing with three prosecutions with 30 plus defendants, with hundreds if not thousands of victims, with millions of dollars in loss. Those are the types of cases that the feds normally take. These large, wide-ranging cases or staggering dollar amounts in the hundreds of millions of dollars. This is a singular case with a singular defendant and a singular victim and a credit card chargeback. It's very odd to me that the feds took it. It's very odd to me that they, at the end of the day, just poof and dropped it when other prosecutors looked at it. All of it's strange. And I'm not surprised that Marco brought a civil lawsuit to tell their side of the story, where they allege that Erica used Tom and her connections to have him falsely and maliciously prosecuted for credit card chargebacks.
I think a person could potentially make the argument that at some point she found out there's no money here, or that Tom said, you just spent a bajillion dollars and that's not okay, and I need those funds. And she was in the position to try to get that money back for him. But that doesn't mean she's not responsible for her behavior. And it also, to me, means obviously there's some awareness that they need that money. You don't behave in that way unless you need that money. She was so flippant about the fact that there was no budget, endless streams of income, for her to then come in with that really particular kind of coldness to him after working together on a bajillion outfits prior, which she knew she received. Like, she knew. So what her argument is that she was overcharged, I guess.
Her statement was that it was criminal overcharging. But most people, when they say they're overcharged, will go to the credit card company or the vendor and be like, I was overcharged. Can we make it right? Most people don't call the Secret Service and have that conversation with them. And American Express charged it back to the business, which means the business was holding that $800,000 loss that was charged back from American Express to them for goods that they say they deliver and have quite a lot of receipts that they have delivered, including screenshots of her wearing things on the show. But American Express didn't do an investigation. They charged it back. And that means the business was hurt to the tune of $800,000, aside from the fact that someone was then arrested, indicted, and prosecuted pending for over 5 years before it was just dropped. That the way that that upends somebody's life is why he's suing for malicious prosecution and has a pretty strong case for it. It's going to be very interesting to see, but Erica's argument and Erica's lawyer's argument is when people think something was done wrong to them, they're allowed to report that to law enforcement. And what law enforcement chooses to do is not on Erica. She just reported what she thought was wrong, and she thought she was overcharged. And was she able to think she was overcharged because she said, I don't need receipts, just bring me the bling? I mean, she's going to get up there and say, well, I had no idea how much they were charging me until I saw it when it was brought to my attention. And then I thought it must have been overcharged. That's what she's going to argue.
What happened to that chargeback?
The company's left holding the $800,000 that's charged back.
They still are to this day?
Yeah. The American Express never recompensated the company.
Wait a second. Why am I confused by this? So the 800K, so Amex was like, Tom, here's a check. We're so sorry. And then they said to Marco, you better pay us back.
You owe us, yeah, $800,000.
Once the case was dropped, what argument is there that it's still the responsibility of Marco?
They're separate. The criminal prosecution and the chargeback are separate. Even though they're the similar they're the similar acts. The criminal prosecution is separate from American Express determining the chargeback.
But Amex was named as a...
They were named as a civil defendant. They're trying to fix that civilly now, but it's not fixed yet.
So is it reasonable to assume or guess that at some point Amex is going to be suing Erica for $800,000?
I don't know if they will, and I don't know if they can because they didn't do an investigation. They took her word for it.
That's literally, Zara allegedly delivered something to me weeks ago. It was one of the largest purchases I've made with Zara. It was like $300, which is a lot of money. Like, I'm sorry, that's a lot of money. Never got it. Have done the thing with the delivery company, didn't hear back, and then did a thing with Bank of America, haven't heard back yet. I mean, that's $300. $800,000. Amex isn't curious to just double, like, dot a single I?
Which is shocking. Which is shocking. I mean, I run a merchandise store. I have seen people say, I didn't receive things. We always do the investigation to make it right and try to figure out who's responsible for it. Oftentimes it's the delivery company delivering it to the wrong place and then somebody either not sending it back or it getting taken or whatever it is. But chargebacks can be tremendously damaging to a business. And so the fact that a chargeback that large wasn't even investigated is shocking, which is why American Express is part of the civil lawsuit. I can't imagine that that's their normal policy. I also wonder how many millions of dollars Tom was running through American Express every year. Because everybody had a fucking American Express card on his firm. And we know he was pushing millions of dollars through that, upwards of $20 million to Erica. So, I mean, they're running quite a substantial amount of money through American Express cards. And I wonder if that's why American Express looked the other way. I don't know. But it's very unusual that a credit card company on a chargeback of that size wouldn't do a full investigation into it and would just charge it back. It's absolutely bananas.
I mean, as is the fact that Chris said that they were fighting to keep him in jail.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like they were as punitive as humanly possible. And Erica's a part of that.
Erica's a part of that. It's wild to see, again, that the charges were just dropped. And there was no resolution for him, for Chris. It was just the charges against you have been dropped. Okay, well, what do I do now? This is 5 years of my life that has been upended by being arrested and indicted. My business has been upended. My business has financially been upended. My life has been upended. And the response from the federal government is, yeah, that's, and? We dropped the charges. What else would you like us to do? You can't sue the prosecutors. They have immunity. It's very difficult to go after the agents, even though they're trying. They have immunity. So the malicious prosecution angle going after Erica and one of the retired Secret Service agents is a difficult fight and an expensive one.
I mean, I would say before the next Pride event books Erica, maybe they should book Chris instead. Like, if we're talking about Erica being an ally to a marginalized community, let's look at what she did to someone who was like a star in his industry. She tried to bury him in sand. He was buried alive. Like, that's a big deal. Like, I mean, this man couldn't bring a child into his family, let alone the fact that his father and brother both died with the stress of not knowing what was going to happen to their loved one who was under attack. Like, I'm not sure. I still like her on the show. I'm so happy to have seen her growth over the past season. But like, that also doesn't negate her active role in some of this. Like, even if Tom said, you're going in there, you're wearing a wire, why would you then gloat about that well after it's happened?
On the show.
Understanding on the show, two truths and a lie. Like, I mean, that's That's to me really bad. That's really bad to be proud of this, knowing that it was a lie. If she didn't know it was a lie then, and she was somehow manipulated to the highest extent, which I could devil's advocate, but I don't know that I can do that a lot with this. You understand at least now what he has gone through. I assume she understood then.
Erica's lawyer's argument and Erica's argument is going to be that Chris sent an email saying, yes, I see that there might have been some overcharges here. And that somehow supports the $800,000 chargeback and the criminal prosecution and the rest of it. The chargeback really should be a civil matter, but she's saying, no, these were fraudulent charges. He was charging my credit card without authorization. This is something that she took into the criminal sphere that truly, if it is accidental overcharging, or we charged you for this type of crystal when it was that type of crystal, those are things that can be resolved civilly. An $800,000 chargeback is wild, but she is going to stand on, based on what her lawyer has said, their case is going to stand on that email that he sent saying, we see that there's some overcharging here. So her whole argument on this, not to devil's advocate, but to explain her argument.
Yeah.
Their legal argument is going to be, Erica thought it was criminal. He said there was some overcharging, and that's all that she knew. So, of course, she wore a wire, and he admitted things on the wire. And his argument is, I was trying to make it right for the customer. I was trying to apologize and fix this. I didn't realize that she would ever take this to a criminal prosecution. And is it just the circumstance that this is how the Girardis operate, that they are going to do everything to save themselves?
I mean, I guess now we understand why she said alleged victim so well. That really seemed to be a confident response. Maybe that's based on some of her behavior.
The Marco Marco case is going to be really interesting to watch play out. American Express has a lot to hold in this and should have investigated that chargeback more, because it would have been much harder to bring a criminal prosecution if the credit card company hadn't charged it back, because a criminal prosecutor is going to sit there and look at it and go, well, if the credit card company didn't see anything wrong, where's the problem here? It would have been a roadblock to a prosecution, but American Express did nothing and went, yeah, okay, we'll just charge it back. So I'm interested to see how that case moves forward. But Erica's argument and all of it's going to be, but he said he overcharged me. But his evidence shows she got those outfits. We see them on the show a lot. There's no loyalty there, which is odd when you work with someone so closely who's helping sculpt the image that is Erica Jane, that there's no like, oh, let's work it out. It seems from Marco Marco, from those allegations from Chris, it seems to be that she was willing to feed anybody to the wolves to save herself. And he was the person that got thrown under the bus. I have to wonder if there were other chargebacks during that period of time to other businesses that didn't go quite as disastrously wrong, because I can't imagine that they did this just to one company.
I mean, I don't see her doing a little tiptoe anywhere near this, certainly not on the upcoming season of Beverly Hills. But I do also, I can't stop thinking about the end of the episode and that roundtable when one of the victims says, you know, is there any way that the show can speak well of us? Is there anything that we can do? And her response is like, you know, it's, I'm not, I don't edit the show, I guess. But I also wonder, why isn't Erica giving them something to take out? Like, why? She's not making the argument that she said it. She's making an argument that some of her the worst behavior isn't real because of the edit.
Yeah, she's like, oh, it's editing. It's like the words came out of your mouth.
Right. It's funny how editors are there on set. That's exactly my understanding of how cameras work. I just kind of wonder, with the reunion, everything else, like, is she going to give the editor something to share?
I don't know. It's been interesting seeing her wanting an apology from the other women on the show for them questioning her about this a massive scandal, but then not being able to give an apology to the victims when they all sat down, and her saying, nobody asked me to, and, you know, but maybe the show show that there's a human cost to this. And she's like, I'm not in control of that. Well, you can say something. If they cut it out, they cut it out. But you can say something. When the women ask you how this has been for you, you can say, I'm horrified by everything I've discovered, and I'm in shock, and I've behaved terribly. But I don't think she sees it that way. So that's not what she's going to say. But she could speak up in that way and has chosen not to. And I think the other women would receive that fairly well. But instead, she's saying to them, I think you all owe me an apology. And they're like, I'm not really, like, we're not rooting for your downfall, but also this is a lot of stuff. It was wild to see.
She's asking them to apologize in some ways for asking her why she doesn't care more about the people who were grievously harmed. She's asking for an apology because the cast members doing what she did not showed her behavior as so much worse. Like, they put her in a bad position by having empathy for the victims, and she's mad at them for that. That's not all of it. They also questioned, you know, if she knew, but.
Well, everybody's questioned if she knew. That's what people want to know, how much she knew. And she hasn't answered that question thoroughly. She said she didn't know, but we haven't gotten a lot of peeks into Tom's marriage with Erica. And I wonder if it's because she is also in the position where she said Tom's never going to admit that anything's wrong, where she portrayed this marriage as like, he's my champion. He's in my corner. He's, you know, we mutually respect each other. It's a big turnaround to go to what was really going on behind closed doors. Not what I portrayed the first seasons we were on Housewives, but what was really going on behind closed doors is I was to shut up, look nice, show up, and ask no questions. And so I had no idea what was going on. I didn't have autonomy and control over our finances or our money, because that's very different than what she portrayed early on, that their marriage was an equal partnership. I suspect it's probably the latter. I just don't know if she's ever going to be able to put that out there on TV, because it can't feel good to have to break down that side of the reality.
The latter meaning that there was an equal partnership, or the...
No, the latter meaning that it was absolutely not how it was portrayed. And okay, behind closed doors, it was a very different circumstance. She said some of that. It's just a difficult thing, because truly at the end of the day, how much we'll hear from Tom is going to be really minimal. And he's one of the people who needs to account for this and is never going to. So it's frustrating. And I think some of the frustration is based on Erica's own behavior. And some of the frustration is that there's no resolution with Tom because of his age, and because he's like, oh, well, now I'm not competent. I mean, the judge saw through all of that bullshit, but he's going to play the old man in slippers in court. Like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. Tom, we've seen the state bar reports. This was going on for decades. I just don't know if even at the end of a trial, if there's going to be an adequate resolution on this. I think people are going to be left disappointed.
Do you think he will see the inside of a jail? Prison? Hospital? Prison hospital?
Possibly. Possibly. But at his age,
yeah,
financial crimes are never punished at quite the level that violent crimes are punished at, even though they can be horrendously devastating. And so I don't know what we will see. There's not restitution there to make the victims whole. Will he get some jail time? Possibly. Will he get some prison time? Possibly. Could it be served in a medical facility? Possibly. Is that, I mean, he's in his 80s. It's not going to be the longest sentence. I mean, it might be long enough for him based on his, you know, life expectancy at this point. But I don't know if it's going to feel like he's actually ever accepted responsibility for the things that he's done.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Danny Barnes, who, you know, became a paralegal, was an incredible part of the documentary, is now battling cancer again. There's a GoFundMe. The Ragomez family donated $2,000 while we're recording this. I think it's at three. The goal is 10. I mean, Erica, maybe instead of the next nice dinner, could put in a couple bucks, you know what I'm saying? Or at least share it. Like, I'll share a link in the show notes for this episode. It's just a terrible situation because the harm continues. It's compounded by what he actually experienced, what that did to his body, plus the damage and trauma of what Tom did. And that's connected. Stress can do terrible things to a person's body, your nervous system, everything else. And it's just, it's unfortunate that he doesn't have the money that was stolen from him, nor the life that he deserved.
Yeah. And the way that bankruptcy works also doesn't feel like justice to many, because those that are the savviest to become secured creditors are generally the companies and large companies that end up ahead of all of the clients. And that's what's happening in this bankruptcy as well. There's just not going to be enough money to go around. And the victims, again, are going to get screwed. Now, the bankruptcy trustee is fighting to not allow some of the payments to the legal lenders and things like that. I think the bankruptcy trustee has been fighting pretty hard, but the way the law is set up, those secured creditors go first. And the amount of time the bankruptcy trustee spends fighting is just diminishing the pot of money that's left to go around at the end of the day. It really is a difficult situation to watch unfold, knowing that the people who are the most harmed are sitting at the back of the line and probably not going to see most of the money.
So is Erica now in a position where she's like squirreling away every last nut? Like, is that what a person would do in this situation? Get the spinoff, continue on Beverly Hills, and just save as much of that money as humanly possible, because you know you're going to owe. But there's a possibility, pending a lot of these lawsuits that are still ongoing, that you're going to need to pony up? Or does she just spend it all because it's going to be taken from her? You know what I'm saying? Like, what do you do in that position, legally, ethically, with your personal?
I don't know what her lawyers are going to advise. I mean, the amount of money she's probably spending on legal fees is substantial. We know there's going to be tax liability, which will never go away, that she is going to have to face. But a lot of the other liability, I think what we'll end up seeing at the end of the day is potentially Erica also filing a personal bankruptcy to try to get out of the debts that are going to be left from Tom Girardi's personal bankruptcy. She's not in bankruptcy right now, but the Tom Girardi personal bankruptcy is not going to get discharged. So whatever debts are left that are marital debts, she's going to be left with, and tax debts. So do I think we'll eventually see maybe an Erica bankruptcy down the road? Possibly. But I imagine a lot of her funds are going to whatever living expenses, being on the show, which can't be inexpensive, and legal fees. So how many assets will actually be there at the end of the day? I imagine not very many, because that would make a bankruptcy easy for her down the road. So you see people that work themselves into a judgment-proof situation where they're like, what are you going to take from me? I rent a home, I lease a car, there's not money in the bank account. You can't easily come for my clothes. Like, what are you going to take? So we'll see what happens. This is still years out of the end of this for Erica. This is not a fast and easy process for her to recover. I mean, there's quite a lot of liability hanging out there. So she is going to have to find a way to stay working to deal with all of these things. And if that's, you know, being the center of conversation and her legal troubles being the center of conversation, then she's going to have to lean into that to stay on the show. Because I don't know what you do next if you're not on Bravo, if you're Erica.
And I do feel like has grown this season. Like, I do see her like learning lessons. She's finding out what empathy is. Kudos for her. You know, she's hold in some of that. She's having conversations with the women. She's sort of talking about the apology thing, but also, if I don't receive that apology, I still need to move on. Like, there's some pieces that are clicking. So maybe we'll watch more of that journey continue in future seasons. That's entirely possible, that some of this stuff, maybe it's not happening in the order at the pace that a lot of us wish it was, but it might still happen.
And we're still going to watch because we want to see what happens. I don't think Erica should be, you know, cast out of society forever. I think there's a lot of opportunity for her to make the things she said right, to acknowledge the wrongs that were done by Tom, and to really start to learn how to empathize when she is not so much feeling under attack. And you can definitely see a lot of her responses are coming out of her feeling incredibly attacked and not being able to step to the side of that and see it from another perspective. Well, the world was crumbling down, and we really watched the world crumble down on her head. Did she know that was coming? The timing of the divorce is interesting in that. How much she knew was coming is something we might never know. Or maybe there's a book, or maybe there's a podcast, because, you know, all the Bravo alums got to do that. That seems to be the thing. We were on this train first, but
yeah,
it seems that that's the thing now, is to have a podcast. And maybe as she grows, we'll hear her side of this more. But it's going to be difficult to navigate alone for her to not center herself in all of this, but still tell her story. That's a difficult thing to navigate.
Yeah, it's the human instinct and the protective mechanism and the ego and the privilege. It's all kind of wrapped up in one. And so I'm so thankful that you came on this app, because there's no one I would rather talk about this with. And the way that you translate all of this for AGs and myself is so interesting and dynamic. And I hope that you're on every crime Housewife Hulu series about these women that we love to discuss for many episodes to come. Unfortunately, there probably will be many episodes to come, but
I mean, how do you even agree to do reality TV in 2024, knowing what we've seen go before? Because it's a different world than it was when shows like The Real Housewives started. And we're seeing, I love seeing kind of the meta of the women, especially on things like Ultimate Girls Trip, talk about how, what a different world it is to be on reality TV now, with how much influence there is from social media and how many more conversations are happening around the show, and how much social media is a part of the show, and arguing over Finsta accounts and troll accounts and what people said on this podcast or that podcast. There's the universe. The Bravo universe is so much bigger than it was, but breaking down grounding down the legal things and figuring out what is speculation, what is known, what is not known, is something I really enjoy doing, because there's a lot we can speculate about, but we also need to focus on what do we actually know. And then watching these stories play out, I'm glad there's women like Sutton and Garcelle and Crystal on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills asking the questions that I would be asking too, and not afraid to ask those questions. And we'll see where Erica goes with this. I hope we see more of her with her therapist. I think normalizing therapy when you're going through trauma is an incredibly powerful thing to share, that everyone can benefit from that. And I hope that we hear more of the victim stories, and that those are followed through as well. And we saw some of that with the fact that the Gomez family is one of the families that has been paid, but there's lots of victim stories that haven't been tapped into yet. And we still don't really know what the state bar is up to. So that's, it's always interesting for me to call out my licensing agency and take a look at what they were up to. But I think they're acknowledging that Tom Jordy was able to kind of infiltrate in a way that is less than desirable. So I'm happy to be here with the AGs. I always love chatting with you. Your emotional intelligence in navigating these conversations is so grounding and important and tremendous, because we're not just watching kind of drama play out on reality TV. These storylines have such bigger implications, and they are much more nuanced than, you know, Erica Bad. And I think it's important to have that conversation of where those things will grow, and to maybe hopefully watch someone learn from their mistakes and overcome them and apologize and hopefully have some healing and all of that for those who are so tremendously hurt by the actions of Tom Doherty.
Emily D. Baker, I love you so much.
I love you too, friend.
I just, you know, you are a meaningful part of this community and certainly of your own. 700,000 subscribers. I went to sleep the other night rewatching one of your legal commentary moments, which we can talk about another time, but we already have online. And I was like, I need a lullaby. Emily D. Baker's YouTube it is. Like, it's just, you're such a delight. It's truly the Emily Show here in the Clofus. Can you tell the AGs where they can follow you on social, subscribe to your YouTube, and listen to The Emily Show?
Absolutely. The Emily Show is wherever you get your favorite podcast. It's out on Wednesday. I do a quick bits episode on Monday, so you don't feel like you're missing out on what's going on with all the legal dramas that are playing out right now. I live stream on YouTube at The Emily D. Baker, and that's where you can find me on social. We've got some interesting trials coming up. The Rust shooting with Hannah Gutierrez Reed is getting ready to go to trial in New Mexico. That'll be televised. We've got the civil case going on with the Petito and Laundry families that's getting ready to go to trial in May. Tom Doherty will be in trial in May. We've got Britney Spears' 12th accounting in the fight over her money in this conservatorship supposed to be going to trial in May. We've got the Sarah Boone case going to trial in March. There's a lot of legal in both civil and criminal that's going to be playing out on YouTube. So you don't want to miss that. And I have an app. The Lawnard app will keep everybody in the loop. It's a free app. I built it to keep the Lawnards in the loop with all of the legal stuff when they're like, there's too much going on. There is. So there is an app for that.
I also have the app, just to let you guys know that I am a true
Lawnard.
I am a true Lawnard through and through. Listen, have you guys signed up for the Andy's Girls Patreon? Number one way to support the pod. You get exclusive bonus episodes and so much more at patreon.com/Andy's Girls. Follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. A link again to that GoFundMe for Danny Barnes is in the show notes for this episode. Emily, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, friend.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening, and we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.